serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. As families across our country mark Passover and Easter this week, we heard about what those holidays were like in a war setting 75 years ago. And we've heard more about what was unfolding at Okinawa 75 years ago this week. We've heard from four different veterans from four different states, and now we'll make that five for five as we listen to the memories of Benny Noonkester, who was a 17-year-old in charge of the Commodore's barge on the attack transport USS Chilton 75 years ago this week.
The first day there, I remember I looked up and here come a plane down, straight down, not on an angle, and got a destroyer right near us and killed nearly everybody on there. And it didn't actually sink, but I don't know why it didn't. And that was my experience the first day.
So first day of the battle, you see a kamikaze take out a destroyer, and that kind of says, uh-oh.
Yeah, it did. Then after that was every day. We had 44 separate attacks in one day. One time there was like 400 planes come in one time, all in 53 days, day and night.
So that's pretty much a constant fear that this could happen.
Yeah, it was. That was day and night in that 40 of them, because they come in at night also. And you just lose so much sleep till you got where you didn't even care. I mean, it didn't seem to bother you. During that time, I would see with the Commodore, we had to be prepared to take him where he needs to be taken. So whatever we'd be on standby, not have a permanent station. And we'd be handing ammunition or filling in someplace. And that's what I was doing at that time. Then later, when I became a gunner, when I was out at sea, that would be a different story. I could have a permit station. But usually, in them situations, I just, for in case I could take over for somebody else.
Is it safe to say that those 53 days at Okinawa were the most intense 53 days of your life?
Yes, I would say that. I grew up real fast.
I bet. And when you talk to people and they realize that you served in the Navy in World War II, they hear maybe the word Okinawa. Do you get a sense that people understand the significance of that battle or the magnitude of it? Because, you know, people focus on Iwo Jima because of the famous photo of the flag atop Mount Suribachi. Maybe they know there were high casualties there. But when you talk about the sheer magnitude of casualties on both sides, Okinawa is one of the bloodiest battles ever.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I feel that. I feel that way. I know we hear more about Iwo Jima, which was sad, but Okinawa did have a lot more casualties. I think you'd combine them all together, be 270,000 lives lost, not counting wounded. Yeah,
and that's when you're talking about civilians and military as well, and nearly 5,000 from the Navy alone were killed at Okinawa.
Yeah, oh yeah, that was the biggest loss for the Navy in the history of the Navy there. Yeah,
and when you hear that, I'm sure part of you says, I'm thankful I wasn't one of them. How close did you come to being one of them?
Oh, well, we got hit by a kamikaze, and I thought that was it. This was in the evening of April the 2nd, and I was way down in our compartment, which is the bottom of the ship, and all at once there's this big explosion. At that time, you went up on starboard and down on port, and we exited out of what, there's 50 of us down there maybe. We got out of there okay, and I was wanting to get topside. I don't know where we're sinking or what have you. One day, I'll just tell you about a good buddy of mine. I went through the gallery, and he had been up on the bridge, and he was all soaked with water and everything, and he had done lost it. He was plumb gone. I mean, he was so scared. And I talked to him a little bit, and I hadn't seen daylight yet. I want to get out of where I don't know where we're going down or what. And I finally had to leave him. And he just went over in a corner and got down in the fetal position. He couldn't help himself or nothing. If we went down, he'd have went down. And I went up topside, and now scattered around on the deck was pieces of bodies and planes all over the deck. I'm standing there because this day I'm just a standby for it. I look over at our sister ship, which is the Henrico, the APA 45. It just got hit, and it was burning dead in the water and killed lots and lots of sailors. And I looked up, and here come these. This days we got hit with bombers called Francis, not fighters, but they were bombers. And I looked up, here come a bomber off over our port side, and it was just getting ready to come down on us because it wasn't flying very high. And all at once that plane was coming, and it made a turn. And I looked up the belly of that plane, and it went out and got our escort. Just blew, you know, got, instead of us, it got that. And, I mean, I just turned around and looked up to straight ahead, and about 5 degrees off of the starboard side, I seen another plane coming in. And it was maybe 200 feet above the water. And I said, I waited there, and I said, well, I waited so long, I said, well, now this is it. This is, I'm not going to survive this. It's too close. Can't shoot it down. So I just jumped back down the deck, down in the galley, made about one step down and jumped, and waited for it to happen. Thought that was it. And it didn't blow, and I went topside, and they got it with a 5-inch on. And I found out 55 years later, talked to the guy, put high sights on that thing, and got it. And so we shot that one down. Then, another minute went by, and I looked over on the starboard side, coming straight in was another bomber. And it was just trying to guess the distance from us. If I said 300 yards, I mean, it's coming 200 miles an hour maybe. And it just ready to make it to hit us. And we shot the left wing off, and it stalled in the air. And I looked at that pilot. I don't know where he shoved that window forward or back and jumped out. Just jumped out in the ocean before it hit, before it crashed. And it hit right at the edge of our ship. And so anyhow, that was that one day. But there's a lot of other ones.
So, I mean, as I hear you describing this, I'm just trying to picture it in my mind. And it almost seems like these Japanese planes, which are not trying to bomb you, they're trying to crash into you and take you out, that they're just swarming around like flies or something.
They did bomb us first. I mean, this one had hit us. I don't know why. He dropped 2 500-pound bombs, just missed us. If he had kept them bombs, we'd have probably went down. And the way I understand what happened there, if you take weight out of a plane, it naturally go up, and it hit us high, you know, instead of down maybe where he really wanted to hit us. We'll never know why that happened. But.
Well, I bet you have your theories on why and how, and it sounds like each one of those you thought could have been it, was probably going to have been it, and none of them were it. Why do you think that is?
Well, I just give God the credit there myself, personally. I really do. I'm standing there, and now I'm looking up, and here's a guy out of my division. I'm just like in a graveyard. I mean, there's, I don't know where anybody's at. And I see him walk out and kick that machine gun off that plane, was laying there on the deck just the other side of me, and he kicked it over the side, one of the machine guns I had on there.
And you said that was just one day? So there are other days that maybe weren't quite as intense but were like that?
Yeah, they was. I mean, there was, I'd say every day there was it was something, not that bad, but I mean, they was getting, hitting ships around us, and I don't know why we did survive.
What was the severity of the damage to your ship, and do you have any sense for the casualties that those kamikaze attacks caused?
Well, you know, it didn't. We got to run back to States right quick and got repairs done and so forth, wasn't that bad. They reported, so I can show you in a little bit, where the write-up, Tokyo Rose wrote up that they sunk us with no survivors. I've got that here.
But you're here to say that's not true? That was a false report.
Yeah, that's a false. That's false. She wasn't very honest.
That much we know with certainty now. It describes there the pieces of the plane going into the sea and being scattered across the deck. You've got proof of that right here in your house. You have a little piece of that Japanese airplane that struck your ship?
Yeah, yes, I do. It's got Japanese numbers or writing on it. I don't know what it means, but and I had a lot of other pieces, and I don't know what happened to it.
There is a Pulitzer Prize-winning war correspondent, very famous at the time, named Ernie Pyle. How did you and your ship come in contact with Ernie Pyle, and was that a big deal to you all at the time? Because you had a Commodore on your ship who was in charge of 30 ships. Was Ernie Pyle a big deal to you guys?
Yes, he was. He was really a guy that you talk to the common sailor, you know, and he didn't really hobnob with the officers as much as he did maybe the enlisted men. And, yeah, he was a fine guy.
And what do you remember about him being aboard your ship? And tell us the circumstances of his death and what you guys had to do with that.
Well, me, I was the on our the Commodore's barge. It was just four sailors, and the day of invasion of Aishima, we took him and his party over to the island, and he got killed within minutes when we dropped him off. And it where it was at, it was only like a bluff. There was no buildings, or he was like 100 miles from anywhere where we dropped him off. And I remember that very well.
You took the Commodore's barge and dropped him off. When did you hear that he had been killed?
I think that evening, because he got killed maybe a little before noon. I'm not sure. But news spread real fast, you know, about it. I had patrol duty that night, all night, on there, just off the island. And I don't know, I never will know what happened. The ship dropped us off and just left us. And I thought, you know, they didn't come back to get us, even the next day. So I don't know where what they had in mind there. But anyhow, we finally went down the coast of Okinawa and found our ship and got back safely.
What were you guys doing that whole time?
We was waiting on to be, after come daylight the next day, we was waiting to be picked up, you know. And we waited and waited till, I don't know, 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning maybe, and nobody showed up. So we didn't know what happened to the ship. Maybe it was sunk. I don't know.
And your ship was not a huge ship, the APA 38, but the Commodore's barge is like a flea on an elephant, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. If you're traveling across country sometimes, they're not going to go rent a motel room. If there are four of you, somebody would say, look, a couple of you guys better sleep because you're going to have to drive after a while. So the boat's coxswain said, a couple of you guys better lay down and go to sleep because otherwise that's what we're going to have to do. Well, how are you going to go to sleep? They're shooting. The artillery's going over. I mean, all this explosions and everything, and it just got dark. So me and another sailor just laid down in the boat, and I mean, it got dark now, and it was so dark you couldn't see nothing. And all at once, I looked at the edge of the boat, and here comes up some fingers inside the boat, and then he pulled his head up. And the only reason I could see that the moon was directly behind him. And I could almost touch him. And then I hollered, and he just dropped back in the water, and it's dark. Nobody slept all night.
So these are our Japanese divers.
Yeah, our job was to shoot them, because we had some LSTs and so forth shooting rockets out there, and then they'd swim out maybe and blow them up, you know, with explosives. And our job was to intercept them and shoot them. If he got our boat, he could have been, you know, no telling what he could have done.
So I imagine. And I don't want to suggest anything and create anything, but I've talked to so many veterans who have had nightmares and flashbacks over the years. That sounds like something that would stick with you, that when you see that image, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, for 40 years probably. the ship was sinking or what have you, but I finally got over that.
And you probably kind of don't know what to do in that moment, do you?
No, you really don't. We were so close to the island on the patrolling there that you could see them shooting flares up, and somebody with rifles trying to shoot them down before they hit the ground. And the artillery is going over also at the same time, and it was something.
it sounds like the kind of extreme circumstances that can make you crazy or make you lose focus. What do you think kept you focused? How did you keep going day to day with everything happening around you, the constant threat of kamikazes, the fear that you could lose your life? What do you think kept you motivated and focused?
Well, I always had a buddy or two. We could talk, and that really helped things. I don't know. I never did really think I was going to get killed, but except that one time, I just knew that was it. But I definitely wasn't in a position that I was ready to go, because I wasn't.
And obviously, we're all thankful these courageous young men lived to tell those stories to help the rest of us understand. That's what they were up against 75 years ago this week. How does that compare to what you and I are facing today? Surely there must be some perspective for us to acquire there. Thanks so much for spending this hour with us today on Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.